Dr. Rory Roberts, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
How did this CLEAN project come about?
Well, it started, NASA had put out a program in the last 4 years that really focuses on having universities lead research projects. So they put together this program that allows universities to propose and lead their own projects. And also a big part of it is multiple universities are part of the team and industry. And so this particular topic that we were proposing was clean aviation. And what I mean by clean aviation in this particular case, even more challenging, is zero emissions. And so how do we transport people and goods around the world with zero emissions through aircraft, typically large aircraft? This is something of the size of a Boeing 737, which is typically the aircraft that Southwest flies. So if you're familiar with Southwest, that's their aircraft that they use almost their entire fleet, I believe, is 737. So, and that type of aircraft is a very challenging aircraft to, in a sense, electrify. And so we started to propose our concept technology as a potential candidate for this, and NASA liked it. And now we have a very large team of students that are working on it. Six universities and three companies, and Tennessee Tech is leading it.
So while we've all been caught up in this discussion about electric vehicles and all of that, there's been a goal set that by the year 2050,
yes,
we want zero emissions.
Yes. So yeah,
that seems ambitious.
It is ambitious, and also considering the aircraft that are sold today, most likely will still be in service by 2050. So the typical aircraft goes 20 to 30 years. A lot of these, that's where you have to kind of, it is ambitious to think if you really want to make an impact by then, you need to start selling aircraft with these kind of technologies very soon. And actually, hopefully we have aircraft available by then. They're much cleaner, or much more environmentally friendly, I should say. So that we can start to gradually make a major impact in that by 2050.
We'll come back in just a moment and talk about the specifics of how you're trying to go after this problem. But I'm curious, when you work across universities like this on a research project, how does that work? And I'm assuming technology plays into that now, of the ability to Zoom and all of those types of things. But how do you do that?
Well, that's probably the very first challenging thing, especially a project of this size, because it's 4 years. It's quite a bit of funds to support students and faculty in universities. In this case, we hope to support more than 100 students over the next 4 years, being able to do research and interact with other universities, interact with industry, interact with government agencies such as NASA. And so you have to start off, what's your concept? What are you trying to, at the high level, pitch as your idea? Then you have to kind of backtrack from that. What kind of expertise, what kind of knowledge do you need? And that's when you start building a team, looking for collaborators, partners. And so each one of these, I would say, faculty members at the universities, they were, in a sense, hand-selected because of their expertise. Industry partners were hand-selected because of their technologies. Or they're, for example, Boeing and Raytheon, which is Pratt Whitney, they're on the team. So they provide insight of, their current technologies to, and also help assist and give the students opportunity to interact with them. And so, yeah, it starts with kind of forming that team. And then it takes weeks and months to kind of put together an overall plan together in a form of a proposal that you can submit, and then agencies such as NASA will review it and select it. So it does, it's like planning a big major project.
Do you break off pieces and, hey, you're going to work on this and you're going to work on this, or is it still more collaborative than that?
It's very collaborative, but we do have, I would say, six sub-teams because the aircraft is we're essentially in this air, kind of taking a step back. In this project, we have put forward a new concept for a propulsion system. And around that, how does that impact the aircraft? How can you integrate that into the aircraft? And some of the key objectives that remain is zero emissions and 150 passengers. So we have to come up with an aircraft that can carry 150 passengers. And there's actually a minimum range you want to target, because if you make it too short, it's just not economical and not very feasible. So typically, you know, aircraft right now can go up to 3,500 miles. We're trying to hit 2,000 miles because that captures most of almost 98% of the market. And so in doing that, we have to look at the entire aircraft, and that's how you put the passengers in, how you handle the fuel, how you handle the aerodynamics. Are you changing the aircraft design? How you laying out the wings? Do you have more weight, less weight, more volume, less volume? And so all these different experts, from structural to electrical to environmental, safety, propulsion, aerodynamics, all these different expertise are brought in working together. And so that we're constantly meeting, communicating, and that's really where it becomes very valuable. And that's one of the major missions of this is workforce development. Because it gets the students, not only are they just working on a research project, they're working on a big team. So they're learning how to manage a project, work with others across the country, and multidisciplinary. So we're all speaking English, but at the same time, we're speaking different languages when it comes across the different types of engineering and sciences.
Tennessee Tech leading the CLEAN project. Dr. Roy Roberts is our guest. It's called CLEAN, the Carbonless Electric Aviation Project, being led by Dr. Rory Roberts at Tennessee Tech. He's an associate professor of mechanical engineering. Now, I'm going to ask you some basic questions here. You're not going to mistake me for anybody that understands engineering. But it strikes me that the power involved in an aircraft is the takeoff.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the biggest challenge of this kind of project, or am I missing something?
It depends. Yes, in our case, we're sizing for takeoff, and that's a substantial amount of power. Depending on where you want to cruise, the higher altitude, the more power you need to have eventually to maintain that altitude. And
so it does require a lot of power
and put that
to cruise.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, this Boeing 737, which typically carries around 180 to 200 passengers, depending on how the airline had it configured. Do they give you less space or more space if it's economic
less.
Versus, yeah. Unfortunately, we're experiencing less space, more
less
and more.
Space.
And so it takes about 30 megawatts of power. And put that in perspective, you know, if you look around the average home, you may say that's about 6,000 homes that aircraft could power during takeoff. If I assume an average power of 5 kilowatts, you know, so that gives you real perspective. Every time you see one of those large aircraft, the typical aircraft, I mean, this is the size of aircraft that makes up majority of the commercial fleet. That's 6,000 homes. You know, I would say, try to remember the population of Cookeville, but that's like 6 or 7 aircraft could power the entire city of Cookeville during takeoff.
Just on takeoff.
When they get up to cruising, it's a little less power. That's why they like to cruise higher altitudes, but, you know, it's about a third of the power typically.
And again, I'm relating this back to electric vehicles for a second, but I think for a lot of people, when electric vehicles were introduced, the worry was that they wouldn't have that power, that you couldn't punch it like on the interstate and immediately get that surge of power. It feels like that we've kind of understood that, yeah, you can get that. Is this in a much broader sense, but is that the same kind of thing that you're working through on this project?
When it comes into designing these things, aircraft or cars, engineers have to make choices of it's got to be cost effective. And you can make a electric car very powerful. They could have made it in the very beginning 20 years ago, but it may not have gone but 5 or 10 miles. So there's kind of a trade-off of making it efficient. Now, as technology advances, that's where we've been able to have all of the aspects we would like in a car, long range, high power electric cars, now that we have battery advancements. Aircraft, you know, it's going to require to have that, you know, to have all electric for a battery, for example, we would have to have at least a 10 times increase in power energy stored in a battery today in today's technology in order to make that happen for all electric. And it's just, And that's kind of what brought some of this forward as let's start looking at this problem, because aviation is one of the most challenging areas for us in transportation for us to make sustainable, lower environmental impact, because it does require that 30 megawatts. It requires so much power during takeoff. We just don't have the technologies today. And while if we look at 2050, we could see the electric cars and other technologies will slowly start to enter the market and start to, you know, and transition this over time to more sustainable, environmentally friendly transportation. But aviation is going to be one of the most difficult and challenging ones. And that's where it's starting today starting decades ago as well. So it takes some time. So yeah, it is that power requirement is one of the major challenges in it.
So is the battery kind of one of the first parts of trying to understand this issue is how we get a battery that has that much power?
There are efforts of looking at different technologies, of battery technologies that possibly right now, there may be some lab scale, but, you know, from what I understand, there's not many technologies today that would even approach that. And we're living with lithium ion batteries today. That was developed in 1980. And so it took 40 years for it to be very cost effective and economic to go into cars. So if you were to come up with in the lab, I've got this great battery technology. We evolve, we're evolving quicker, but this may take 20, 30 years to make it, you know, mass production, low cost, reliable, and all of those, and ready for the real market. So in our case, we still have a liquid fuel. And so we're still using the energy stored chemically in a liquid fuel so that we're able to have a large amount of energy in order to support this aircraft. But the challenge comes in, how do you do it carbon free? And that's kind of where we've been able to utilize. In our case, we're using ammonia. There's two different fuels we could possibly use, and it's liquid hydrogen, which is a cryogenic, or we can do liquid ammonia, which, you know, ammonia is in your Windex, your cleaner, those kind of things. But as you get it in a pure form, it's used in agriculture. You can use it as a fuel as well.
I bet there are people who are listening, or your friends or colleagues that you come in contact with, say that, you know, I can't even keep my phone charged. So I'm going to fly on an airplane that has batteries in it. But you put it in context when you say that this is a technology that dates back to 1980, and yet it has taken all of us a long time to really come in contact with it and to use it in a way. So what is the other technology that may be out there with batteries that we've not even yet discovered?
I would say in our case, we're using fuel cells. And so that's another technology. Some fuel cell technologies are more mature than others, because there's actually some cars that utilize fuel cells. And the one we're utilizing is a high temperature fuel cell. So it's a technology, it's out there, but it's not as advanced and commercially available. And so that's kind of where our research is unique, and where we're able to show that technology shows promise, in the sense it could be light enough and small enough in order to produce the amount of power needed, because in the past they've always been really bulky, heavy systems. And so it's technologies like this that are, you know, people know about them, they're still being developed, but it takes certain breakthroughs to kind of continue moving them along. And we all remember when we first got our first cell phones, you would talk 60 minutes and your battery, maybe not even 60 minutes, and your battery would be, you'd have to get a new battery.
Right.
You'd carry two or three batteries around or stay plugged into your car the whole time. So it wasn't until lithium ion started to come around with smartphones, and to help smartphones become, we were able to have more and more powerful phones because of that. So, so those fuel cell is one of the other technologies. There's different advanced gas turbine technologies industry is looking into, and academia is looking into, that shows some promise as well.
And I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that the fuel payload on an airplane now is some of the biggest weight that's involved. So you don't want to just transfer weight from the fuel to the batteries, I guess, is in part of what you're looking at.
Yeah. And, you know, you have, it's around 24,000 kilograms of fuel, so almost 50,000 pounds of fuel on one of these aircraft if you fill it up. They don't like to fill it up unless they have to and it's a long range. One downfall because of batteries, as you're using the fuel, you become lighter. So you're consuming that fuel, and the aircraft comes lighter and more efficient as it flies because it's getting lighter. But a battery, as you use the charge in it, you're still carrying the weight. And so it does make it more challenging when you want to land. You're landing very heavy. And aircraft are really not designed to, it does a lot more wear and tear on them if they're landing heavier. And so sometimes there's emergency landings, they will actually dump fuel to reduce the weight. And there's and help for safety, because the less fuel you have, the better. So there's comes some of those challenges with different parts of flight. You want less weight, you're definitely the heaviest when you take off and full of fuel.
Such fascinating work that Dr. Roy Roberts and the team at Tennessee Tech are working on, as they work with other universities across the nation and NASA on this project of carbonless flight. Dr. Roy Roberts is our guest from Tennessee Tech. So how would the plane of tomorrow that does not use fuel, that uses another form of energy, how would it be charged? I'm picturing airports with these big cords.
Yeah, so if we, I wish I could remember some of the studies that have been done, but if, for example, we were able to advance the battery technology and have a 10 times increase in energy storage, I talked about, having to 6,000 homes is required during takeoff. So you can imagine there's probably quite a few power plants sitting there at the airport just charging planes. And so it's a significant consumption of electricity, and it would require essentially an airport to be a power plant in a lot of ways. And so, and the amount of energy that's transferred just during refueling is substantial. I can put some numbers out there, but it's like it's gigawatts of power that has to be delivered if you want to charge that aircraft in 30 minutes. And so that becomes a very challenging thing of thinking, when you really look and see how much energy is actually transferred when you're fueling your car, for example, it's a lot. It's a lot of energy in the chemical form. And so when you're trying to replicate that, and we've seen that in cars, we keep getting these more and higher powered superchargers. And so just to get a substantial charge, you're having to go almost 100 kilowatts to get a charge in your car. Again, that's enough to power 20 homes.
So is that a whole other side of the research, is how we would get the power? So yep. Let's say we could get the plane to do it.
Yep. It's an infrastructure.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, do we build do we have something equivalent to like nuclear plants? Making sure we don't just shift the problem down, to the side, So if we have power plants, what are they going to be? Is it going to be renewable energy? If it's renewable energy, you're not going to have readily wind and solar power right there to charge the aircraft at all times. You want to be able to charge it and have this aircraft fly three times a day. So that means you would have to have really substantial energy storage in the form of big batteries at the aircraft if you were to go all renewable. And that's where I think some of the studies I looked at have mostly looked at, do you have actually nuclear plants that are, if you really want to look at this as a scenario, that would be something that would provide more, I would say, carbon-free type power to charge these. But it is, just the infrastructure, how you would do it in a timely manner, those are all very challenging. And that produces a lot of heat. There's a lot of things that would come into designing, being able to transfer that much power and that quickly.
I don't want to get us down a political road per se, but I have had people say, is this whole move to electric vehicles, electric planes, electric vehicles, have we really thought this out? Because do we have the infrastructure to do this? Do we want as a society to go back to nuclear power? And I say go back from the standpoint of, we still have nuclear power, yes, but it's certainly not as prevalent a discussion as it was, say, in the 1970s,
yes,
that we were going to use it. Can you weigh in on that as somebody who's in the middle of that? Have we thought this whole thing completely out? Maybe the experts have, and we just don't know.
I mean, everything has its own challenges, so I guess it comes down to what challenges are you willing to accept, and that becomes a regional So if you're in a region where you have a lot of available renewable power, and that may be your best bet. Tennessee has, you know, the ability of renewable power. We also have hydro storage and such. So we, you know, there's things here that are benefit here in Tennessee. You may go to other parts of the country, they don't have that availability, where nuclear power may be their best option. Doesn't mean it's crystal clear and a clean winter. It just means weighing your different options. So this is, and when it comes to cars, electrifying cars, yes, there's definitely some scenarios where electric cars make a lot of sense, and there are some scenarios that doesn't. Not everybody has a place to charge their car. And it may be very difficult. Everybody's different daily patterns or daily habits may not be able to support electric cars. So having, you know, having these options out there, I believe, is the best bet. And who can adopt it and it makes sense to adopt it, I think, is the best bet right now forward. And so, but yeah, the people are thinking about this. It's a tough, I guess, to make certain quick.
Well, it strikes me as that it's an either or, and yeah, like most things, it's not really either or. There's things that are going to have to happen. You know, we've had an expert on from one of the local utility companies say there's no way that the grid could support everybody going to an electric car right now.
If we were to, yeah, there's a chance we could go fast enough, then all of a sudden we're having to produce more electricity by other means. Go back to coal. We don't want to do that. That ends up
defeated ourselves,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it ends up being counterproductive to what the whole reason of pushing electric cars. So there has to be a growth that could be maintained without doing undue harm or being counterproductive of what the objective was originally. And so, and some of the technologies we look and, you know, at this is if we're going to truly make a lower impact to the environment, make things more cost effective, we have to think about the cost. We have to think about what is the true cost of this, because nobody wants to adopt something that's going to cost more.
Nobody's going to pay $595 for an airplane ticket that costs $295. I mean, I guess there are some people that would do that, but most of us are not willing to say, okay, well, it's less carbon footprint, so I'll give you $300 more to do that, right?
Yeah, I would imagine most people vote with their wallet.
Yeah,
that's just which ticket they're going to buy.
Right.
So
that's the truth.
Yep.
Dr. Roy Roberts is our guest. Dr. Roy Roberts from Tennessee Tech. We're talking about the CLEAN Project, helping to develop carbonless aviation. How do you get students involved in a research project like this?
So typically, I you just try to make them known of what's out there. In our classes, we typically kind of advertise there's opportunities for undergraduates to do research, and we really encourage that undergraduates, especially, you know, I know in engineering, encourage all the students to get involved outside of their class into research projects or competition clubs. We have ball hall and those kind of things, because those are the things that really allow the student to take what they've learned in class and apply it, so that they're basically embracing what they're learning. So by the time they graduate, they have a lot of experience, not just, you know, class experience and book knowledge. They know how to apply it. And they also develop that confidence, because that first time you learn something and you go out and there's not an answer in the book and you have to apply that knowledge you learned, you're like, well, am I right or am I not? And you have to go out on a limb and be confident in your the ability and the skills that you've developed, that you're going to come up with a right answer. You know, there may be multiple right answers. It depends on what resources you have. If you have a lot of time, you may be able to work on a long time. If you have different tools and such, you may be able to do that. So we encourage students to do undergraduate research, and that's typically how I get students involved in my research group. Last year, I hired 9 undergraduate researchers. Some of them choose to stay to do graduate school with their master's or their PhD. And I think once they kind of get involved with these exciting projects and they see they can make a difference in their learning at the same time, they tend to really embrace the research side of it, and be able to work on new and cutting edge things. And there is no answer in the book at all. In a lot of these cases, we're developing things that don't exist out there in literature. For example, I had 4 students just last week. We went out to a conference and they all got the opportunity to present their work. and write a paper and present the work that they've been doing on this project. So that gives them an opportunity to go out there and really show off the work that they've done, get feedback, get questions, network, and interact with the aerospace industry.
Dr. Roy Roberts is our guest from Tennessee Tech. Our remaining moments with Dr. Roy Roberts. He is leading the CLEAN project, which is bringing together universities as well as industry to look at this idea of, can we get by 2050, can we reduce the impact on the climate of commercial air travel, working with NASA on that. So I think about myself, and there'll be nights where I lie awake thinking about the solution to a problem, and my problems are much less complicated than yours are. What's the part of this, if you can narrow it down, what's the part of this that keeps you awake in trying to solve this issue?
Well, that's a tough one. There's having to pick one.
Yeah.
So I guess that, you know, the challenge is there is almost infinite possibilities and directions we can go. And we have put it on ourselves to really open up the design space for this aircraft, to really bring out the creativity and the team and the students. And that's always nervous when you think about, okay, how are we going to bring this together? And I guess from my personal perspective, how do I create the environment for this team to communicate and get these ideas across? And how do we not miss an idea, or how do we really motivate, especially the students, to, you know, to really, I guess, participate there, you know, as much, you know, be very motivated to, you know, put a lot of hard work into it and really kind of embrace that. And so, because it can be challenging if you sit here, if you put out this blank sheet and say, start off, design me an aircraft, where do you begin? And so, and that's what sometimes gets challenging, is just to kind of help get the right steps to move forward without hindering the creativity.
Sometimes you narrow too quickly?
Yes, you don't want to narrow too quickly, but you also don't want to leave yourself or the team waiting because they don't know what's next. You don't want to hit a speed bump and stop, but you also at the same time don't want to narrow it down to where you've already constrained the solution and you may have missed out on opportunities or other ideas or designs that may be very advantageous.
That this aircraft has to look like an aircraft today looks,
yeah,
for example.
So once you kind of show them a picture of an aircraft, in the sense, you've already, I don't know of a better word, contaminated that vision that
right.
They have. They're already thinking about that. And so that's kind of one of the difficulties, that balance of helping, including myself, helping move this project along without hindering that creativity, without closing in that design space, but continue moving forward. And some, it just takes the right discussions, the right exercises, whatever it may be, to kind of get the ball moving sometimes.
Fascinating work. I hope you'll come back and keep us up to date on this as you move forward with this particular project with NASA. The CLEAN Project, Carbonless Electric Aviation. Dr. Roy Roberts with Tennessee Tech. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you for this opportunity. Have a good day.
Wow, fascinating.